Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Jones!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. Just me, Simon Hughes. Today, Simon Mann's off gallivanting somewhere, but we have got a guest on this show today, and the guest is Tino Best, the former West Indies fast bowler and Barbados fast bowler as well. Very lively character, hilarious to listen to, and great memories, actually. And the reason why we've got him on today, well, he was a guest in our virtual cricket club this week. If you want to join our virtual cricket club, by the way, and join us with other guests over the next few weeks, actually, we've got David Gower as a special guest on Tuesday night at 8 p.m, 23rd of April. If you want to join us, you can go to worldsbestcc.com and sign up. Each week we have an interview with a leading player or leading personality in the game, and also it raises money for the Professional Cricketers Trust. So go to that website, worldsbestcc.com, and sign up. Join us for David Gower next Tuesday. But anyway, we had Tino Best on the show last week, and there was a reason for that, and that's because this is a defining week in West Indies cricket. This week, the middle of April, 30 years ago, Brian Lara broke the world record, 375 not out in Antigua, of course, and then he repeated the feat 10 years later, so exactly 20 years ago this week, he scored his 400 not out against England, of course, also in Antigua. And Tino Best played in that match. Tino has great memories of it. We'll come to that shortly because there's a fascinating story about what motivated Lara to overtake his own record. But I was lucky enough to be at that moment 30 years ago, the 18th of April 1994, to see Lara beat Garfield Sobers' long-standing record of 365 in Test cricket. Lara made those runs over the first 3 days of the Antigua Test match against England, the fifth Test of that series. It was a dramatic series, actually. That was the series in which England were also bowled out for 46 by Curtly Ambrose in Trinidad. I was covering it for the Daily Telegraph, and it was just a privilege to be there to watch this sensational, groundbreaking, historic-making moment when Lara became the world record holder of the highest Test score. And, of course, Garfield Sobers were there, and actually walked out to greet him and congratulate him on the middle. So I wrote about it, actually, that experience. And I'm just going to read you, actually, a little bit from The Lot of Hardiacca, because it sort of puts it all into context, really. What was amazing, actually, about that Brian Lara innings 375 was that he batted for 12 and three-quarter hours, faced 535 balls, struck 45 boundaries, ran 195 in singles, twos and threes. And his score chart, each stroke recorded with a thin black line, looked like a huge plate of spaghetti. He was obliged to raise his bat more than 15 times to acknowledge the applause from passing some landmark or other. And, of course, the most important of those was when he pulled Chris Lewis for four to surpass Gary Sobers' 365 not out. It was one of those things where it just felt like it was fated. And driving to the ground on that third day, we, the press, knew it was going to happen. And we said so to each other. Actually, I travelled in a minibus with Godfrey Evans, the former England and Kent wicketkeeper, who with a great big long sideburns, was a fantastic character. And we all thought that Lara was going to do it. He was 320 not out overnight on the third day. And the wicket was so flat and the bowling was so innocuous, it seemed almost meant to be. Initially, on the third morning, his stroke play was sketchy, with an uppish waft and some playing and missing. And it was during that playing and missing that Angus Fraser beat him outside the off stump and said, with grudging respect, "I suppose I can't really call you a lucky when you're 340 not out." Then, having edged his way nervously to 361, Lara drove Fraser sumptuously through the covers to draw level with Sobers. In the next over, Lewis bounced, Lara swivelled, and the record was his. Just to underline that the whole achievement was predestined, as he pulled the decisive boundary, he brushed the stumps with his pad, dislodging a bale slightly. But it remained perched precariously out of its groove as the pitch was invaded. Most of the policemen who ran on were more interested in shaking Lara's hand than in controlling the crowd. The most striking thing about his innings, that's sort of at the time when I was writing, apart from its length, of course, was its purity. He played every shot in the book, all with a classic natural backlift and a free swing of the blade. He hit virtually everything along the ground and never once relied on his pad in defence. I met an old school friend of Lara's who first played with him as an 8-year-old in a backyard, and he said, "Sometimes we used a scrunched-up evaporated milk can as the ball. If you miss it, it cut your leg." So that's obviously why he was able to use his bat rather than his pad. And then just to finish, quite apart from the on-field dramas, I have never experienced such a wonderful cricketing spectacle. The raw emotion on the spectators' faces, the rousing applause, the stall holders gaily selling rotis, Chickie's throbbing disco during intervals and breaks, and Gravy the cross-dresser performing on a rostrum, as well as the iron band roaming the ground, banging anything from pans to hubcaps in syncopated rhythm. The uninhibited carnival atmosphere was spellbinding, and the din carried on late into the evening behind the main stand. Actually, I remember Curtly Ambrose and Richie Richardson playing in their band, actually, and entertaining everyone until late into the night. It was the most extraordinary day of cricket. And Brian Lara, of course, was the king of the West Indies cricket, and really the king of cricket on that particular day. And that was during his amazing spell when he also scored about 900s in county cricket, including his famous 501 not out as well, which came up a little bit later in the summer against Durham. Thank God I'd retired by then. So, remarkably, that was 30 years ago today, and 20 years ago this week, he exceeded it. He scored his 400 not out against England in the same island, Antigua, on a different ground. But it was the most remarkable performance as well. And our guest, Tino Best, as I said, played in that match. And he has a fascinating story about how that innings came about.
I'll take you back to the third test in Barbados. So the third test, Hogger got the hat trick, right? And we were beaten in Barbados. And I remember we came in the dressing room, we had 3 love down dead. England has never whitewashed us in the Caribbean. We can hear the screams and the banging and the partying from England. And we are like in the next room, right? And you got all the big dogs. Chris Gayle, Brian Lara, Sarwan, Shiv Narayan Chandrapal, Darren Ganga, myself, Ridley Jacobs, Fidel Edwards, Pedro Collins, Corey Coleman, Ryan Hines, Ricardo Powell. I mean, we had some serious talent, but we just got outplayed. And the whole dressing room is completely silent. And Brian Lara gets up and walks out. And everyone looks around at each other. And he comes back into the dressing room with these two spectators. Now, I know right away one of the spectators. She's like my neighbor, right? Her name is Marcia, right? Marcia is like coolest person ever. She has the same name as my grandmother, so I know him, know her well. And her name is Marcia Austin. She's actually passed away last year. May she rest in peace. So Marcia Austin comes in, Mama Austin comes in, and with this other gentleman. And Mama Austin goes off. She said, guys, I know when I feel defeated. And, you know, and I feel you're all pain. But we got winner, man. And don't worry about it. We know it's a game, and we know we get outplayed. And she gives us this speech. And she makes Brian Lara cry. True story, bro. And Brian Lara starts to cry. And when Mama Austin finished, she said, look, I love each and every one of you guys. Just give it your all in the next game. We don't care the outcome. Just work your butts off and just give everything you got. The gentleman went off. He talks about West Indies cricket, the history behind West Indies cricket. He talks about how much it makes them feel when they go to work, know that the team is doing well. They work better. The productivity level gets higher. Then they go to work and we get beat. They're sad. They don't want to work. They want to stay home. And we flew up to Antigua. And I remember Brian Lara gave us the quote of the day. And I can't remember. I can't remember what the quote was, but it was a quote from The Art of War. One of those quotes, man. He used to give us these quotes. And we read the quote and Matt started. And I remember there was a lot of people for Brian to cut behind. And then, man, after that, man, the man just went crazy. I was like, I remember when he came off at 300, right? On 300, he didn't look tired. Like, he was so fit. He was like, I said, B, are you tired? He's like, nah. They call me Animal. My nickname is Animal. He said, Animal, I'm good, man. I'm fresh. I said, you serious? He said, yeah, I just do an ice bath and I'm good. His eyes didn't, he said in 94, he was tired. He was super tired when he was 300. But this time he's like, easy. He doesn't feel anything. The name is 10 years now, 10 years in.
It was exactly then, 10 years later, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, correct. And then he just went, the next day he came out at 320, I think. And he went berserk. And then I remember really Jacobs got both. And he was running down the steps because he was like maybe 362 or something. When Michael Vaughn bowled Jacobs. And I down the stairs and I seen the ball. I was like, no! I wanted to be a part of history. And then no ball. Jacobs ended up scoring 100 and Lara scored 400. And I remember the game drew. I think Brian ended up dropping a catch that messed up the game anyway. But I remember at the end of that innings, I remember saying to him, you did it for Mama Austin, didn't you? He said, you mean the lady that cried? I said, yeah. He said, yeah, boy, that real touched me. And it was like, wow. And I remember on the anniversary, a couple in COVID. So the beginning of COVID, when everyone was shut down, I wrote about it on my social media and it went berserk. Everyone could not believe. And Mama Austin, she wrote on the thing as well. And she was alive and she was like, oh, this was such a beautiful moment for me. And I told people, Mama Austin made Brian Lara score 400. True story. You just brought me back. And may God bless her soul, man. Beautiful, beautiful woman.
Lovely reminiscences from Tino there. And after the break, we'll hear his solution for how to generate more fast bowlers in the world. And also what to do about West Indies cricket to try and rejuvenate it and get their star players playing test matches again, rekindling their halcyon days.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So some more now from Tino Best. We talked about how to create a fast bowler. We talked about how to get those brilliant West Indies players now starring in the IPL back into Test cricket. But first, we talked about his own island of Barbados and how it is that it produces so many Test cricketers. I made the mistake, actually, of saying I thought Barbados would produce 90, but no, it's even more. And it's only the size of the Isle of Wight.
Man, I can tell you, I think it's nearly 100 now that we've produced. I think right, in the new era now, nearly 100. And there's a funny thing that you can meet a Test cricketer anywhere on the island. You can meet him in the supermarket. You can meet one in the supermarket. You can meet one at a rum shop. You can meet one playing dominoes. You can meet one at Bashiba. You can meet one at East Coast. You can meet one at North Point. You can meet one at the airport. It's dime a dozen. And I think for us in Barbados, we've been really blessed with a very good culture of cricket. When I say culture, I'm talking about like the infrastructure of it. So remember, Barbados is an English started off. It was a little England. So you would have had a lot of the infrastructure that came over from England in terms of, let's say the commerce, you know, the sugar cane, the this, the that. What happened is that the plantocracy of Barbados society started cricket. So they'd lay the foundations for what you are seeing today. Now, we have our club cricket is the most competitive. I would say our club cricket is like probably the most competitive in the world, bro. This is just our club cricket. We play, now it's T20, the T20 World Cup. So everything is the T20, our T20 Cup is being cut to 5 games. But in a given season, we play the elite, because we have elite division one, and then you have the intermediate and the lower teams, and then the school teams and stuff. But our elite division, we play 90-20 games, which is in colored clothing, white ball. Then we play 9 3-day games, which is mimicking first-class cricket, 90 overs in a day. And then we play 9 50-over matches. And that's a season.
Wow.
So, and this is just club cricket.
Yeah.
Because our association is backed by the lottery. So it really has a very good grassroots program that brings through the great cricketers from the stars in the world that you know though, from Shea Hope to Jason Holder, Kemar Roach, those guys that are still around that people would know. When they come back to our club cricket, they come, even Jofra Archer. I think he's playing in our elite tournament. I think he was clear. He got to play against my club this weekend. So that's going to have a nice little crowd watching it. But it just to show you how professional our club cricket is. And I think that is what allowed for Barbados to produce so many international cricketers, because they understand cricket. I mean, a lot of people deal with the T20 stuff now, but as a kid and growing up in Barbados, you wanted to play Test cricket. You wanted to be a Test cricketer. You wanted to be a Malcolm Marshall. You wanted to be a Desmond Haynes. You wanted to be a Gordon Greenidge. And you wanted to be a Sir Garfield Sobers, a Sir Everton Weeks, a Clive Lloyd, a Joel Garner. Those are just to name a few. Those are the superstars that you grew up seeing on television. I grew up in a house with a superstar, my uncle Carlisle Best, who, as you guys know, 164 against England at Kensington Oval 1990. Then backed it up with a wonderful 100 in Guyana, Georgetown in Guyana, in the one-day international. So when you grow up around such greatness, you want to be great. So your community is cricket. There's two things that we used to say growing up as kids, education and cricket. Those are the two things that are going to make you see the world. So you had to make sure that you give it your all in cricket. And for me, I didn't make the Barbados on the 13s, the Barbados on the 15s, the Barbados on the 17s, the Barbados on the 19s. But I played for West Indies at 20, West Indies A team at 20, West Indies senior team at 21 or so. because I went into a program called the Barbados Defense Force Sports Program. Now, what is that? What is Tino talking about? Now, it is an army program where it has five disciplines: cricket, football, table tennis, boxing, and athletics. So what you do, you can apply to join this program. You get a monthly stipend, about £500 a month. And what you do is you get vetted. They see if you're physically fit to join the program. You probably got to get a letter from your association. So the Cricket Association, you will go there and say, hey, Barbados Cricket Association, I want to join the army program. Can you guys, you know, put in a word for me to join? And the BCA will always say, yeah, go ahead. You know, so for me, when I joined that program from 16, just before I was about my 17th birthday, what it taught me to do is discipline and professionalism. So how a regular week in the army will go is that before you actually pass out, like the march and passing out parade, you will have like 10 weeks of recruitment where you learn how to march, you learn how to shine your boots, you learn how to press a uniform, you learn how to live in the jungle for 2 weeks on just rations, you learn how to map read, basic survival. You get what I'm saying? You learn how to swim, you learn how to run, you have to do 1,000 burpees every day and run 10 miles a day for 2 months. And so as a young man, nearly 17 years old, even though I didn't make those age groups, I was in a professional environment. So when it was time for me to go around and play cricket, I was fit, I was fast. So people took notice. So that goes for all the other disciplines. You got the football guys, they go to Galway United or Dundee. They go and play more in Ireland, the Ireland Division One. We have a lot of guys who come through the program that end up playing over in Galway. I always remember that name, Galway, because a lot of the guys used to go through. They had an exchange program with the army. And then the athletes will go to Cuba to do their studying, and then they become Olympians. And then the boxers as well, and the table tennis, all those guys end up being Olympians and stuff. So the army always had a good professional environment. And that is what a lot of cricket boards are doing now, trying to create a professional environment. I was in a professional environment where I had no choice. I was in the army. And when you're in the army program, if you don't follow suit, you get thrown in jail, like a real, real jail. Serious, bro. You get what I'm saying? So it's like pure discipline. So, and a lot of people that read my book, Mind the Windows, the name of my autobiography, I talk in depth about that whole program and how it got me to being physically fit. Like, fitness has always been my passion. So I never fail a beat test. I never fail a fitness test. I have one injury in my entire 17, 18 years as a professional cricketer, because I knew how to take care of my body. I knew how to prepare myself for a season, and I knew how to eat, what to eat. And that's why I guess I look at nearly 43 years old with a grandson that is a year old. I don't think I look like a grandfather.
Well, I mean, actually, it looks like you can still do 1,000. Looks like you could still do 1,000 press-ups, 1,000 burpees, actually.
1,000 burpees. And that's my favorite movement.
Yeah.
And I love burpees. Burpees is the greatest thing. And what that army life taught me, because when I played for Barbados and West Indies, I was still a member of it. It taught me that if you love what people hate, you're going to be great. So people hate fitness. If you love fitness, you're going to be great. You separate yourself from the crowd. When I go and play Masters cricket, all the guys, we just come from Sri Lanka. All the guys are saying, man, Tino, you should be playing this. You should be playing. But I say, no,
I'll tell you, I had dinner with Shane Watson. I had dinner with Shane Watson during the World Cup. And he was dreading playing in the Legends because people like you, who are still bloody fit, bowling at the speed of light. And he hasn't had he hasn't picked up a bat for 6 months. So
he usually plays with me.
Oh, that's good. Well, very wise. He's very wise. Listen, I mean, what I'm interested to know, actually, I mean, since you've raised this sort of whole subject of fitness and stuff, which is a really interesting topic, I was with Rob Key the other day, you know, the head of English cricket, the director of English cricket, and he said the thing that England want now, and you'll sympathise, you'll identify with this. He said, we need a battery of fast bowlers. Because somebody asked him in this dinner, they said, what do England need to get to number one in the world in Test cricket, 50 over and 20 over? And Key said, well, we've got the batters. We've got some emerging young spinners, pretty good. We haven't got enough fast bowlers. We need some real fast bowlers like India, all these quick bowlers. Now, how do we get people to bowl quick? How do we, you know, it's not a natural thing in England, is it? You know, in Caribbean, you've got lovely weather and hard pitches and, you know, sun on your back. And it feels, and also you're, you know, you're supple, you're athletic generally. Mm-hmm. You kind of look after your bodies and all that. Mm-hmm. How do we do that in England, do you think?
Easy. I'm about to finish. I'm about to finish. I have another year of my bachelor's degree. And then I'll probably apply for the strength and conditioning coach job in ECB.
Great. I mean, good luck to you then. I mean, great.
Yeah, yeah. You know. I got, and then I'll probably, while I'm applying for jobs around the world, I'll probably start my master's as well. But I have.
You mentioned fitness and you mentioned nutrition, which are key things clearly, but also you need to be able to. You not think that, because I, you know, I was not as quick as you, but I was a quickish bowler. And I think what Mark Wood always says, if you want to be a quick bowler, you got to desire to bowl quick. You've got to have that sort of burning passion to want to bowl quick.
I'll tell you what, it's so easy to get fast bowl. It's so easy. I'll tell you the formula. I've been the strength and conditioning coach for the St. Lucia Kings for 5 years in the CPL, right? And what I have realized about the young fast bowlers that I would have interacted over the last 5 years, all of them are soft. As in ice cream in a microwave soft. And that has to do with the infrastructure from primary school. Let me tell you why. Now, when I was growing up as a kid, I was allowed to go to the beach and swim all day, climb trees, throw stones at mangoes, run about, as we would call run about, ride my bicycle, fall down, break my hand, do push-ups, do everything, climb trees. Young people of today do not have the fundamental movement patterns. Now, what is Tino getting at?
What you mean is they sit on their ass.
Thank you very much. Right, you know what I'm talking about, Simon, right. So this generation, they're on a phone. They're like this. So their spine is curved. They're playing Xbox. They don't run around. They're eating Doritos. They're eating fast food every day. When your mom and your dad come home from work, they're too tired to prepare food. You get McDonald's. You get fish and chips. You get whatever. You're not even eating nutrition food that is nutritious for your body. You're basically killing yourself. You get what I'm saying? So by the time you play a little bit of cricket, And the coach identify that you have a little bit of pace and they start to load you, you break down. Because from 9 years old, you don't even know how to swim. You weren't even squatting. You weren't even pitching a marble. You know what marbles, pitching marbles? Mm-hmm. You remember pitching marbles? Mm-hmm. Play marbles. Mm. You know, that's a Caribbean thing. You will Google it, marbles. Marble pitching, you have to stay in a squatting position to pitch on the floor. On the ground, under an aki tree, under a mango tree. You stay low. You pull yourself up. The kids don't have that kind of movement pattern anymore. So I'm giving you the problem. How am I going to diagnose the problem? And this is how I'm going to diagnose it. You start with the primary strength and conditioning coaches in. That's going to teach kids how to lunge, how to hinge, how to squat, how to push, and how to pull better. Those five movements and carry. So you're teaching kids from 9 to 13 how to do those movements better. And this is not cricket. This is sports in general. I'm talking about human movement. We got to teach our children how to move better. Get them off those phones. Tell them only an hour with the phone. Only an hour on the Xbox.
Do you remember Saj Mahmood, who played for Lancashire, quick bowler? Yeah. He's a good lad, and he was MCC coach for a while, and he was going around the schools in London, the state schools, the primary schools, to try and teach them movement, PE.
Yeah.
And he said, one school he went to in East London, he said, what do you do? What kind of sport do you do on a daily basis? And apparently the only exercise, the only PE they did was walking.
You got to be kidding me, bro. So that's the problem right there. So even if you have a child who is so good with their hand and eye coordination and they're playing the game, when you start to load them. So for instance, I got cricketers who can't do a pull-up. Can't do a pull-up, bro.
You said you wouldn't tell anyone that, Tino. Thanks. God.
Yeah, I mean, I got cricketers that can't do a pull-up. And so you as an SNC coach, you're coaching the creme de la creme of cricket or whatever the case may be, and they can't do a pull-up. So it's not that the player, something is wrong with the player or the system. I think it goes back to the root. We got to understand what's the root problem. And the root problem is how they are raised, what they're doing as children, what environments are you going into. When they leave primary school and they go to secondary school, we have to make sure that they're going into a secondary school that has a proper physical education teacher who has a background in movements. So you can go and learn this stuff as a PE teacher, how to move better with primary school kids, how to make between 13-year-olds to 17-year-olds learn how to move better, how to lunge, how to squat. So when they do decide on, oh, I want to be a lawn tennis player, I want to be a rugby player, I want to be a cricketer, that when they get to a professional setup, you don't have to teach them how to squat or lunge. That is that makes an SNC job even more harder, because you can't load the athlete to get him stronger for him to do the sport or the skill for a longer period. If a fast bowler is not physically fit, Simon, he can't bowl four overs at 90 miles an hour. One of the reasons why I see Mark Wood always breaking down and then he bowls quick and then you miss him for a couple months, because from young, He never had a good foundation.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
He never had a good foundation. So if you start from that primary school level and you train the kids how to move better, then you will get better athletes. And that is the root of the problem. That's how the cricket boards have to look at it, the rugbies, the whatever the case may be. And those guys are miles ahead of the cricket. Even doing my degree here, I can the degree emphasizes so much on like movement pattern for the youth. I have a certificate in youth development, youth movement. The kids can't move, bro. So if the kids can't move, even though they might be able to hit a six and hit a four, they got a little pop gut. They look like 50 years old before they're 20 because of all the ignorance that they were eating from kids. So we got to identify. Yeah, we got to identify who we want to work with from a very young age. And the need to be multi-sport. I don't think that we specialize. I just want to finish this point. We specialize too early with kids. So when a little kid is 10 and 11, we just want him to play cricket. No, let him play lawn tennis. Let him play table tennis. Let him run track. And then when he gets 14, 15 and he starts to then you can deal with him. But what that does is helping him to get stronger through different ranges of motion. So when he's actually ready to specialize in the cricket, he has a strong base. You get what I'm saying, guys?
Yeah, I mean, actually, if you look at some of the stars, say England players, and South Africa, I mean, de Villiers, you know, was a brilliant all-round sportsman, wasn't he? Johnny Bairstow, you know, played a lot of rugby, played a lot of football. Joss Butler, brilliant tennis player. Did you see his innings tonight, by the way?
No, I don't watch any of that cricket.
Oh, my God. That was
he scored 100?
Well, he was 60 not out, and they needed 40 off the last two overs with only two wickets left. So they were eight down, 40 off the last, 39 off the last two overs, and he got them. And he was ill as well. He was sick, and he managed to get the runs. Incredible innings. Got 100.
So that means he had the Michael Jordan flu game then.
Maybe. I mean, it's the highest. It's the highest run chase in the history of the IPL. 224, I think they got. Amazing.
IPL is ridiculous. You don't have proper fast bowlers down there, man.
Crazy. Well, they're the broken. Reason. They start off as fast bowlers and they end up as like medium pace because they're so broken. God, Jesus.
Yeah, because you want to know why that is. Comes right back to my point. They don't play enough first class cricket.
Yeah. Yeah.
First-class cricket, as you will know, Simon, you played a lot of first-class. First-class cricket strengthens you.
Yeah.
I played like 120, 130 first-class games.
Yeah.
But because I had that good foundation from the Army program.
Yeah.
Like when I was 17 years old, I was squatting, snatching, front lunging, front squatting, all of those things in the Army. Mm. This was military training.
Lucky man. You lucky man.
I
had to play.
We say blessed.
You were blessed. I had to play 200. I played 220, 230 first class games.
But
I didn't have any of that. I didn't have any of that.
I'm getting very concerned about all of us who are playing in our charity game in August. I think we're going to break down after two balls, and we're going to everybody watching will just have to bowl a ball. I'm very conscious that you've got to go, so we're
going
to
keep going.
Can I just ask one more question? One more question. Yes, it's really been interesting listening to you. Mm. Just one more thing. Big theme: West Indies Test cricket. Now I heard a story today that the ICC. Share out their money, obviously, and most of it goes to India. 80% of it goes to the BCCI. Something like 240 million of the ICC money goes to the BCCI, India, and only 27 million goes to the West Indies.
Disgusting.
Now, is that a way of, if we change that, of, you know, redistributing the income, is that a way of trying to get more West Indians into playing Test cricket?
Of course. For years, they've been going on, brother. We talk about this in my time, like the big three gets all the money, and what is so shameful about what goes on now? West Indies cricket built world cricket.
Yeah,
let's not beat around the bush. Let's not get too diabolical about this. West Indies cricket developed world cricket, brother.
Yeah.
We West Indians have made hundreds of millions of dollars for every single cricketing board in the world. And we don't get a cent, brother.
That's a very good point. I mean, you were sort of disruptors in the 70s, you know, when there was that sort of dominance, the cartel of England and Australia, basically, with a bit of South Africa.
15 years.
Yeah, and you dominated for 15 years. Yeah.
1980 to 1995, never lost a test series.
That's right.
I give you a simple story. 1960. I just want to carry you back to 1960. West Indies versus Australia, Melbourne. When the West Indies were leaving, 150,000 people lined the streets to say goodbye.
Wow. That was the Tide Test series, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Joe Solomon. Tide Test. Yeah.
This is from West Hall. And you want to know how much money West Hall made from that tour? $500 Trinidad. $500. Richie Benaud was making $30,000 for that tour. West Hall was taking home $500 Trinidad per test match, brother. Mm. Which is equivalent to 250 US right now in this day in currency, brother. Mm. So you understand the disparity. So when you tell me India gets 240 million and West Indies get 20, brother, there's normal behavior. Mm. It's normal. It's heartbreaking, but it's normal behavior. Mm. They ain't got name for the boys from the island. All they want to do is use and abuse us, brother. And eat off of us all the time, bro.
Do you think there's an appetite?
Capitalism.
Is there still an appetite for, you know, young people to play Test cricket in the West Indies?
Absolutely.
There is.
That victory against Australia made
massive
re-energize us. Mm. But it's not even about re-energizing us. It's that if the money was distributed fairly, we don't expect if India gets 100 million, we get 100 million too because we're not playing well. But if they get 100 million, give us 50. Mm. And what that does is help our cricket as well. The grassroots. So we can continue to work grassroots cricket and we can keep our best coaches and keep our best players home so they don't have to run and go to this place and the next place to make money. Like, think about it. A West Indies at full strength, without IPL, Do you think West Indies cricket would be in the position they are in now if there wasn't any IPL?
No.
Thank you. That's all I'm going to say. If there was no IPL, the Chris Gayles, the Pollers, the Bravos, all those other
guys. Narine. Sunil Narine. He got 100 today.
He got 100 today. Oh, my God. That's what I'm saying, bro. Sunil Narine. All them guys, you know what they would do? The two things that the three things that they're going to look forward to, I'm going to tell you. They're going to look forward to first-class cricket in the Caribbean to perform, to get in the West Indies. They're going to look forward to playing for the West Indies to do well, to get in county cricket. Cricket was the king for
It was the finishing school. For Desi and people like that.
It was the pinnacle. I spent two or three summers playing county cricket. The greatest thing since sliced bread, brother. The professionalism, the people, the crowds, the county you're playing for, the pride, the prestige. It was like playing for like the aristocratic society of England. It was amazing. I loved it, brother. You understand what I'm saying? So it wasn't no IPL. Everybody wanted to play county cricket. And I'll tell you a joke. When you realize that the IPL guys who don't get a good IPL deals or they don't do well, where do they end back up crawling back to? County cricket. If you look at some of the teams that are playing, I'm not going to call any names. I can see some fast bowlers up there playing who ain't got no IPL deals, but they still want to make an earning. What they do? They crawl back to county cricket.
He's unstoppable, isn't he? A bit like his bowling, actually. And fascinating to listen to, and very passionate, of course, as well. And I reckon, I've said to Rob Key, actually, I reckon he would be a pretty good guy to sort of headline a fast bowling academy in England. He's finishing his studies soon, and maybe he'd be interested in a job like that. But he's still playing, of course. He's still bowling quite quick. In fact, Shane Watson told me that in the Legends tournament, he dreads going out to face the likes of Tino Best, who's still incredibly fit. If you look at him on my Instagram feed, Cricket Analyst One, you see how fit he looks. He looks about 25 and raring to go and still keen to bowl 85 miles an hour. And it's not much fun if you haven't picked up a bat for 6 months, as quite a few of those cricketers who play the Legends tournament haven't. So that's it for today. And it's interesting, of course, he mentions people crawling back to county cricket. County cricket carries on, of course. Tomorrow is the next round, the third round of county championship. For a lot of bowlers, it'll be a relief that they've got the Duke's ball in their hand instead of the dreaded Kookaburra. I heard on a story on the radio today from Andy Zaltzman that this round of games, the average wicket produced 45 runs, which is a record for county cricket since records began, actually. 45 runs per wicket, and more runs scored in those first two rounds of games than has ever happened in two rounds of county championship cricket before. So the bowlers are absolutely dying to get their hands on the Duke's ball. I'll be down at Hampshire tomorrow, continuing our trial with these remote-operated cameras. So check out the Hampshire stream, and check out also our sister podcast, Storylines, with Melissa Story and Nikki Chowdhury, with lots of good tales to come from there as well. Simon and I will be back after the weekend to review those next round of matches and for some more cricket conversation. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.